This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
WNYC Studios is supported by the Natural Resources Defense Council. Using science, the law, and people power, NRDC is committed to confronting the climate crisis, protecting public health, and safeguarding nature. They address the impact of fossil fuels on communities and our environment. They help protect wildlife, public lands, and irreplaceable ecosystems that all living things depend on. They work to enact policies for clean air, clean water, and access to nature for all. You can help NRDC safeguard the Earth for future generations. Visit nrdc.org/WNYC for more information.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The tension in Ukraine continues to escalate. U.S. officials have accused the Russian government of lying about drawing down its troops, and they said that a Russian invasion is still potentially imminent. Staff writer Masha Gessen recently got back from reporting in Ukraine and a situation of excruciating anxiety in the capital of Kyiv. Masha joins us on our podcast, Politics and More, talking with executive editor Dorothy Wickenden.
I talked to a lot of people in Kyiv, and there are distinct categories of people in Kyiv, people who have firsthand experience of the war and people who don't. And Lena Samoylenko is a young woman from eastern Ukraine who spent many years helping people evacuate from eastern Ukraine, bringing supplies to eastern Ukraine. Her own family, she had to bring out. And she has a somewhat angry response to the way that the less experienced people in Kyiv are reacting to the threat of war. And she has this very defiant response saying, I'm kind of going to party until it starts. Because look at this city, look at this life. It is so vibrant. It is so culturally rich. And at the same time, making arrangements for forming a little commune in her house on the outside of Kyiv, and thinking through things like getting firewood for when they have no fuel to for their generators. It's an extraordinary way of knowing, right, what they're preparing for. There's a kind of loss of innocence. I mean, I've covered a lot of wars and war zones, and I think there's a huge difference between people who are staring down the threat of war for the second time. They're very practical. They're not innocent. And in some ways, they're both more and less frightened than people who have never had that experience.
That's Masha Gessen on the situation in Ukraine. And you can find her on our podcast, Politics and More. This is the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick. Sheldon, how are you?
I'm doing all right, pressing forward as best I can.
Sheldon Pierce joined us in 2020 as a music editor and writer for The New Yorker's Goings On About Town section. That's a job that entails listening to thousands of hours of music. Last year, I talked to him about a piece that he was working on about posthumous rap albums. I imagine you in a small room listening to music 14 hours a day. Am I kind of getting it right?
Yeah, a lot. Sometimes more than that.
And right now you're listening to posthumous rap albums. What's that all about?
Yeah, so every genre sort of has recordings that come after the artist has passed. The Prince estate has been releasing a ton of music since he passed. A lot of it reissues, a lot of it sort of live outtakes. But rap is specifically different from other genres in that a lot of these artists are young artists who pass in their primes and then leave a lot of music behind. The phenomenon sort of started in the late 90s, early aughts. with rappers like Notorious B.I.G., Tupac, Eazy-E, Big Pun. But recently, in the past 16, 18 months, we've sort of seen a boom in posthumous rap albums. Sadly, a lot of rappers have died in shooting incidents, in drug overdose related incidents. And what we're seeing in these specific incidents is rappers now have, they can record wherever they are. They have a setup in their house. They have a setup in their tour bus. They have a setup in their hotel room. It is easier now than ever to record music. And so they are recording hundreds and often thousands of songs. And so when these young rappers are dying, they are leaving behind massive catalogs.
Just to be clear, so if you are a rapper, you're able to do this sitting, you know, in your kitchen with
Absolutely.
A microphone and something coming through your headphones. Now, are these tracks that are formed after they're gone? Are the beats laid on after sometimes? How is it all done technically?
So this is fascinating, and I want to get into one of our picks, Mac Miller's Blue World from his posthumous album Circles.
It's a blue
So Mac Miller, largely independent rapper, died in 2018. He was sort of just on the cusp of figuring out who he was musically when he passed.
Sheldon, one of the mysteries of these records is not only what makes a good posthumous song, but who gets to decide this business of the central creative intelligence being missing, having the music being controlled by executors, lawyers, producers? It must be quite a drama.
Yeah, so one thing that we see is typically it starts with how these people want the artist to be perceived in the long term. And in a lot of cases, the best of these albums are decided by people who are close to the artist, who are putting the artist's interest first, but mostly are coming together as a tribe and deciding these things together. In the case of the Mac Miller album Circles, there were many different people in the room. John Bryan, who was his key collaborator, his engineer, Vic Weinstein, his manager, Christian Clancy, and his publicist, Nick Deal, all put their heads together and were trying to decide what was the best for this music. And they bumped heads a lot.
What else have you been listening to, Sheldon?
I've also been listening to the music of the emo rapper Lil Peep. Emo rap is sort of a weird and controversial distinction, and Lil Peep was among the most controversial figures of this movement.
Why was he so controversial?
There are emo fans who don't think that he's emo, and there are rap fans that don't think he's a rapper because he is blurring these lines, and perhaps that speaks to how innovative the stuff that he was working on was. I want to get into the song When I Lie, which sort of speaks to how difficult it can be to create some of these posthumous records and the process that you must go through.
Many men have tried to save her, but all they do is try. Woke up on a lonely day, she can't help but wonder why. I saw it on her face, she wanna make the cry. She ends up in a better place in time when she get high.
So you just listening, you can get a sense for the kind of music that Pete makes. It's raw, it's woozy, it's repetitive, and a lot of his songs sound unfinished, and that is the way that he likes them. He likes that rawness to sort of stand in for emotionality. And so Peep died in 2017, and two posthumous albums have been released since. But I had a conversation with Pete's mother, Liza Womack, about how she really had to fight to become the acting administrator of his estate and ensure that his wishes were met. So in the process of the album getting made, one of the albums getting made, she kept hearing about how wonderful things were going and about this great Ty Dolla $ign feature that was added to this song, When I Lie. And she thought it sounded great until she went through Peep's old files and heard the original and realized that they had taken out half the song. So it was at that point that she decided to be more involved and help curate the compilation that this version, the original version, comes from. So you see a little bit about how these projects can create controversy without their creators to make creative decisions for them, because who gets to decide what creative decisions are made in the aftermath and what music is released to which audience?
Now, I think your third choice is one of the saddest events of the, I guess, the pre-COVID part of the year. In February, Pop Smoke, who was a huge figure in Brooklyn with drill music, I guess.
Yeah.
And he was killed in a home break-in. People broke into his house and shot him to death.
And Pop Smoke is a particularly sad case because it seemed like he was at the forefront of this larger Brooklyn movement that was just sort of pushing out and making a statement nationally.
Said I'm never like, you know, a special packet with the automatics. We gonna send him to heaven.
Drill is sort of this hard-hitting, dark music about sort of street violence in particular and living through it and navigating it. It originates in Chicago, but the kids in Brooklyn sort of made it their own.
She like the way that I dance. She like the way that I move. She like the way that I rock. She like the way that I woo.
And he was the rising tide raising all ships, if you will.
What has been his recorded legacy in the months since?
So after Pop Smoke died, the rapper and Pop Smoke mentor 50 Cent executive produced his posthumous album Shoot for the Stars, Aim for the Moon. And he told Pop Smoke's mom that he'd make the album so successful that he'd get her to award shows. But that is obviously a very different thing than saying that he'd make the best possible album. So the album in turn sort of embraced pop rap from across the country and stuffed unfinished songs with some of the biggest contemporary rappers and has been entirely different from the drill music that sort of made his name.
Do you ever worry that kind of extraneous stuff, junk, is going to get put out and it's going to diminish the reputation or diminish the legacy of a particular artist?
Absolutely. Every single posthumous album runs the risk of doing this. And I think the Pop Smoke album is a good example of this. It is so far removed from the stuff that he made his name on, the stuff that he was best at. But on the other hand, you see this situation where the music that was on the album reached its intended audience. And in the end, Pop Smoke ended up becoming bigger in death than he ever was in life in terms of a national audience, in terms of his songs being huge, and in terms of his album going number one in the country. So at the end of the day, even though critics like myself might say that this album is not Pop Smoke's best work, the music found its audience in the end. So who are we to say that it shouldn't have been released? She
want some. Got that big Birkin bag worth 5-6 figures. You might be out your league, can you buy that? I pull up on the top, going on the thorn, I'm the thorn. You can fuck around if you want, out in Bali. Big swing, big dress, big make a big mess. Before we done, she asked, what we going to do it next? Next, so what if see us in the jet?
You can read Sheldon Pierce on music of all kinds at NewYorker.com.
She like on that gangsta. I said she like on that gangsta. She wanna with the rules.